Thank you. It's just so great to be with you. I have to say, when I got off the plane yesterday and the sun was shining and the temperature was about 65 degrees and I had left this cold, rainy Seattle, which has been cold and rainy for many months now, I thought of something that Mark Twain said. And Mark Twain said when he was asked to choose between whether he would want to go to heaven or hell, he said he'd want to go to hell for the company and heaven for the climate. And I was thinking, well, you know, I could stay in Seattle for my husband and friends, but I'd rather come here for the climate. It's just beautiful. So thank you for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here. It does make me a little bit nervous that you all clapped before I said anything. So I'm assuming you clapped because of Nancy's great introduction. Bishop Fulton Sheen once said that when people clapped before he even opened his mouth to begin a sermon, he once said that he believes they're clapping out of faith and hope. And then at the end, he's sure they're clapping out of charity. So I want to share with you today a couple of things. One is I want to tell you how the librarian action figure came to be, because to me it was just a wonderful example of what a wide range and what wonderful things we do as librarians and those of us who work in libraries. And then I want to share with you a little bit about my own background with libraries and then conclude, and you could see from all of this I'm going to have to talk very quickly. I want to share with you some of the perils of a life of reading. I am assuming that we all are familiar with the pleasures of a life of reading. Indeed, many of us would probably not have chosen this profession had we not loved to read. Little did we know we couldn't read, you know, at work. Nonetheless, many of us wanted to become librarians because we wanted to share our love of reading with other people. And so that almost goes without saying, but it's really important for me to share with you the perils of a life of reading, because in one of the as you know, when you do collection development, it's very important to balance your collection. You cannot have only one side of any issue on the shelves. And so if I were to spend the next half an hour just extolling the pleasures and virtues of being a librarian, I would be doing a disservice unless I talked about the perils of a life of reading. So that's what I'll finish with. But let me start with a librarian action figure, because it is one of my very favorite stories to tell. There is a company in Seattle called Archie McPhee, and they're a bricks and mortar store, also online, on the web, and they sell a variety of gag things. One of the very successful series that they do is a series of action figures, and those action figures, way back in 2003, included Shakespeare, Moses, Jesus, Freud, Einstein. And I was at a dinner party with the owner of that store, a guy named Mark Palo, and he was telling us that people had been writing to him saying that that 5-inch plastic Jesus action figure was healing them. It was performing miracles in their lives. Now, we were all being very, very respectful of other people's beliefs, unlike those of you who giggled when I said that. We were being very respectful of other people's beliefs, and I said, but Mark, the people who really perform miracles every single day are librarians. And someone else said, Mark, you should do a librarian action figure. And at that point, we all fell off our chairs laughing, because it seemed like such an oxymoron, librarian action figure. Who would have put those words together? And then someone else said, oh, and Nancy should be the model for that. And then conversation switched to other things, and the evening went on. And as we were driving home that night, my husband said his four very favorite words to me in the car. He said, Nancy, think this through. And then he went on, as is his wont, to say many more things, including, did I really want to be a 5-inch plastic figure? How would that feel? You know, and I said my favorite words to him, which are, oh, Joe, don't even think about it. It'll never happen. And then a year later, I got a call from Mark, and he said, Nancy, can you come to Mukilteo, which is a little town north of Seattle where their offices are? He said, can you come to Mukilteo to be digitized? And then I had to decide what to wear. Now, you know from the other action figures, there was nobody I could call to consult with. You know, it wasn't like I could pick up my phone and say, hey, Mo, sandals or not. So I did what many of us, I think, would do in a similar situation. I went with the nicest clothes I had, which happened at that time. I'd been invited to speak at a very fancy women's club, and I felt like I needed to be really nicely dressed for them. So I went to the local Eileen Fisher store and spent more money than I had ever spent in my entire life on a very pretty heather gray skirt and turtleneck and cardigan. What I didn't know is that those very tailored Eileen Fisher clothes don't translate into plastic particularly well. So there were some people, the 21 librarians in the world who have no sense of humor and take themselves far too seriously, I heard from them. And then I heard from the people who didn't care for the shushing action. And at first I thought, you know, I answered every one of them. I'm sorry that your feelings were hurt. You know, I just really responded. And then I just thought, listen, get a life, you know. I mean, many strange things happen to me. And one of them is I'm probably the only person who has ever been yelled at by a shoe repair man. I took a pair of clogs in to be reheeled, and he screamed at me and said, I don't like to work on shoes that are in this bad condition. I mean, but the weirdest thing was getting two unsigned emails when the library action figure came out saying, you have set the library profession back 40 years. So, I am very proud to tell you that the librarian action figure is one of the second best-selling action figure of all time. And the reason is because we do such good things for the world, and we do make the world a better place. And people understand that. And that kid who brings an action figure to, you know, his or her librarian after the end of summer reading program, and those of you who have gotten action figures for graduation, I mean, you know, somebody said, I got 9 action figures. And I wrote back, I said, you could start a baseball team. But people send me pictures of action figures. There's been an action figure at Mount Everest Base Camp. I have the picture. I'd be happy to show that to you. Someone had it on their wedding cake. So the librarian action figure is, I think it's a tribute to all of us. And I think that when the librarian action figure outsold all the other action figures. And when it started slipping a little bit, Mark decided to bring out the deluxe librarian action figure in red. And so when he wrote to me and said, I'm doing this, and she's going to be changed to red, and I said, well, can you take a little gray out of her hair? And he said, yes, they could do that. And then I said, well, could you make the skirt a little shorter? And he said, no, then you would have to be redigitized. I just think it's a wonderful story, and it's a wonderful tribute to all of us. And my life in libraries has been one that has been so meaningful to me and so important to me. I grew up in Detroit in a family, a lower middle class family. Not only did we have no money, but it was a family in which there was no happiness. And it was the kind of family that if I were writing about it today, I would, of course, describe it as dysfunctional. Back then, in the 1950s, I don't even think dysfunctional was in the dictionary. And what I simply knew was that it was a house that was mired in unhappiness, and it was unsafe for me to be there. And so consequently, I spent my childhood at my local public library. It was the Parkman branch of the Detroit Public Library. I'd go there every day after school. I would walk the 2 miles and stay there as late as I possibly could. On Saturdays, I would wake up very early. I would pack a lunch. I would go to the library. I would be there when it opened, and I would still be there when it closed at 5:30. And it was those librarians, particularly a librarian named Miss Frances Whitehead, who really took this miserably unhappy child that I was and gave me the gift of books and reading. And I knew when I was 10 years old that I wanted to be a librarian. I wanted to be a children's librarian just like Miss Whitehead. And I remember thinking, because I was also the kind of kid who wanted to make the world a better place, I remember thinking that there was nothing that I could do that would make the world better than to give to another child the gift that she gave to me. I'm just going to tell you a very quick story about something that happened when I was leaving the Seattle Public Library to sort of embark on this teaching, speaking, and writing career that's now been going on far longer than anybody thought that it would, because I think it speaks to what I'm talking about. One of my last jobs at the Seattle Public Library was in charge of programming. And so I supervised those people who did all those wonderful public programs that you described so beautifully that they do at Memphis. And at the end of the summer, as most public libraries do, there was, of course, the summer reading program. And because I supervised those great children's librarians who put that on, I was invited to go. Now, I am somebody who is much more comfortable reading than I am interacting in real life. I have no small talk at all. All I can talk about is books and reading, and I'm pretty good at that. But once we get off that subject, I have nothing to say. So I dread social I dread invitations, and I never go anywhere. But I knew I had to go to this breakfast. And so I worried about what I would say and who I would have to meet and who I would have to talk to. I spent a lot of time worrying about that. And the morning of the breakfast, I got to the hotel. It was at the downtown Sheraton in Seattle, and they showed me where I was supposed to sit. And as soon as I saw where I was supposed to sit, all my worst fears, like, were right there, because it was a table for eight. There were already 3 men sitting at the table. No one else was sitting there, and I was put between these 2 guys. And when I was introduced to them, one of them was the deputy mayor of Seattle. He was on my left. On my right was a member of the library's foundation board. Now, he is one of those always tanned people, because he spends the wonderful Seattle summers, and I invite you all to be there during that one summer day we have. He spends the wonderful Seattle summers in Seattle and the horrible Seattle winters in, like, Palm Springs or someplace like that. And plus, he is the sort of man who wears very shiny loafers with tassels on them. Now, if I had anything to say to somebody like him, in the face of those loafers, I would be struck dumb. I mean, it's like he and I would inhabit totally different worlds. So he was on my right. Directly across from me was a guy named Dennis Bounds, who was one of the newscasters in Seattle, who was always the announcer for these, the MC for these programs, these summer reading programs. So there we are seated. They bring the orange juice. They pour the coffee. And first of all, nobody else sits down with us. They're all going off talking to other people. And then none of those three guys are saying anything. And I feel like, well, I'm the hostess, sort of. I'm from the library. I better say something. So I say what I always say when I have nothing else to say, which is often. I say, so what's everybody reading? And that conversation came to a dead end in 3 seconds. Because the answers were the Da Vinci Code here, the Da Vinci Code here, and the Da Vinci Code there. And then silence fell. And it fell for a really long time. And when I get anxious, I start sort of shifting around in my chair. And I guess I was shifting around so energetically that my napkin fell off my lap. And I needed to reach down to get my napkin, which had evidently not only fallen off my lap, but like flown under the table. So I had to lift up the table skirt, which was just about as long as these table skirts, and look for my napkin and then reach and get it. So as I'm under the table reaching my napkin, I notice that Dennis Bounds is wearing cowboy boots. So I sit up and I say, Dennis, great boots. And Dennis says, oh, do you know why I wear them? And I said, no, why? And he said, because I don't have to match my socks. Now, I was so thrilled with the level of repartee that we had achieved that I neglected to ask him the next important question, which was, at what point didn't he have to match his socks? I mean, I had visions, and those of you with children will understand this. I had wonderful visions of just like emptying the socks out of the dryer, not matching them, just dumping them in a drawer. Think of the time it would save, the number of books we could get read without folding all those socks. But I suspect more it was that he didn't have to match them to the suits he wore on air. But there I am sitting at the table, you know, my heart is just pounding in excitement because I had, you know, had this great discussion. I had acquitted myself well, and then silence fell again. And nobody said anything. No one said anything, and it went on for a long, long, long time. And finally, into that silence, I said something which is absolutely true, but it is something that one does not, well, here's what I said. I said, you know, my childhood library was so important to me that I dream about it fairly frequently. And the man who was sitting on my right, he of the tanned face and those loafers, looked at me with horror. And if no one has looked at you with horror recently, or indeed ever, do not be afraid. You will know it when you see it. He looked at me with horror, and he said, just like this, he said, oh, my God, Nancy, get a life. And I wanted to say to him, but I didn't, because he was a member of the library's foundation board and very generous, and I did work for the library, and I do have a small amount of sense. I wanted to say to him, you know, in this world we are given one life, but it's through books and reading that we can have any number of lives. We can go anywhere, we can do anything, and we can be anyone. And I knew that that was true when I was 10 years old, and I know that it's true today. And I know that there are kids out there who come into our libraries whose lives can be shaped and grown and developed through the work that we do. And I still, after all these years, and I too am amazed that I could walk up the steps looking back when I got my library degree. can still walk up the steps unaided. I know that being a librarian is the best profession there is, and it's a profession that does such good in the world that we should all be very, very, very proud of ourselves. So I think that you need to feel really good about what you do and the changes that you make in people's lives. And I was lucky enough to work with Miss Whitehead, this librarian who had such an influence on me. My first job after library school was back in the Detroit Public Library. But I never told her what she meant to me and how important my interactions with her were in my life. And I know that there are kids out there, college kids, 10-year-olds, who aren't going to tell you what a difference they make in their lives, but I want you to know you do make a difference in their lives. So for me, books and reading have always been maybe not the most important thing. I think my family is the most important thing, but they've certainly been a close second. And when I was asked to write Book Lust and then more Book Lust and then the new book, which is Books for Kids and Teens called Book Crush, you know, we couldn't do Book Lust. We had to do Book Crush. And actually it was a suggestion of a young adult, teen librarian. She emailed me and said, "Oh, Nancy, do a book called Book Crush for Good Books for Kids and Teens," which was a great suggestion. When I got to do those and to share with those in those three books about 4,000 or so of my all-time favorite books for all ages, it was just such a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for me. And, you know, I wanted to call Book Lust I don't have time to tell that story. Okay, I'll tell that story another time because I really want to share with you the perils of a life of reading. The pleasures of a life of reading are numerous. All those things that I said, going anywhere, doing anything, being anyone, and we all know those are true, but there are some very serious perils of a life of reading, which I want you all to be aware of. One of those perils of a life of reading, particularly if you learn your vocabulary from the pages of a book, is that you never know how to pronounce anything. I cannot tell you. Now, when I first started as a librarian, I was lucky enough to work with somebody who'd always come to everything I ever did a talk at, and she would sit in the front row and she would shout the correct pronunciation out. I always thought that when things went wrong, they went awry. and that when somebody gave you the wrong information, they have mizzled you. Now there are people out there who say misled, but I think that's like a north-south distinction. You know, south of the Mason-Dixon line, it's one thing. And there are people who have been so misled by what they might have heard that they use misled, but it's clearly mizzled. Then another peril of a life of reading is that, well, I'll just speak for myself. When I'm reading along in a book and I run across a word that I sort of know what it means, but I'm not exactly sure, I am frequently too lazy to get up off my chair and get the dictionary down and look it up. I always think, oh, I can get that word from its context. Well, no. I remember when I was about 11 years old and Miss Whitehead suggested Anne of Green Gables. She was Canadian, actually, which makes sense because Lucy Maud Montgomery was Canadian as well. And I started with the first Anne of Green Gables book and just loved them and read all of them. My favorite was Anne of the Island when she goes off to college. And in Anne of the Island, Anne comes back to Prince Edward Island because one of her best friends, Ruby Gillis, is dying. And Ruby has always been the source of Anne's jealousy because Ruby has long, straight black hair and alabaster white skin, and Anne, of course, is freckled and red hair, and Ruby's dying, and Anne comes back to see her, and she goes to visit Ruby on her deathbed, And she knows when she leaves Ruby's house, and we, the reader, know when she leaves Ruby's house that she's never going to see Ruby alive again. And then there's a line that says something like, and Ruby died that night of consumption. And I remember thinking, well, who ate her? It gives like a whole new meaning to, you know. I mean, fast food could then be galloping consumption. So that's another peril of a life of reading. A third peril of a life of reading is that this only happens in certain instances. It happens when, if you're like me, you discover a writer and then you want to read all of their books, preferably in order. And if it's a series like the Sue Grafton, Kinsey Millhone, now A is for Alibi through T is for Terror, that's not going to, this peril is not going to come into play, because you're going to read them and enjoy them, one more than the other, whatever. Doesn't matter whether L is better than M. It's not going to change your life at all. You have a good time, but that's it. But when you're reading a series such as the Master and Commander series, the Patrick O'Brien Sea Stories that are set during the Napoleonic era, I read all 23 or so of those in order. And so for months and months and months and months, I was like in the early 19th century. And I was at sea with those people. And I was avasting and ahoying everybody. I was like, you know, talking about letters of marque and, you know, everything. It was like the 21st century had nothing for me, and there I was in the 19th century. And I knew it had gone a little too far, because I got very annoyed at a good friend of mine, and I said to him, David, you have blotted your copybook with me forever, my lad. And he, who had not read those books, looked at me with, like, horror. But I have to say, the biggest peril of a life of reading, and one that we really must be concerned about, those of us who read to excess, and you know who you are, the biggest peril of a life of reading is that you can never know for sure whether your memories are really your memories or if you have borrowed them from a book that you read. Let me give you an example. My younger daughter, Katie, and I talk all the time. She's a freelance theater director and is frequently flying hither and yon, and I'm frequently flying hither and yon. So we're always talking as we're running to catch airplanes. And we talk, we're very much alike, and we tend to love the same books, and we talk all the time only about the most important things. And so one day I said to her on the phone, Katie, did I ever tell you about the dress I wore to my junior prom in high school? And she said, you went to your junior prom? Well, you know, I was a little offended by that. I said, well, yes, I went to my junior prom. I went with someone named Mike. And she said, oh, well, you know, what was your dress like? I said, oh, Katie, I said, it was absolutely beautiful. I said, it was very, very pale green, and it had a tulle skirt. Now, in years past, I would have said it had a tulle skirt. And that no doubt I was the belly of the ball. But thank goodness those years have passed and I know how to pronounce those words. And I said it had a peplum bodice. And Katie said, oh, peplum. Huh, what's that? And I realized I had never actually looked up the word peplum. So I said, well, you know, I'm not exactly sure what it means, but, you know, I think it has something to do with pipe cleaners or something. So then there was, a, you know, Katie said, she sort of murmured approvingly. She said, oh, pale green tulle skirt, peplum bodice. She said, oh, it just sounds lovely. And I said, oh, yeah, it was a beautiful, beautiful dress. And then there was a silence on the phone. And with cell phones, of course, there's always the danger that you're going to be dropped, have dropped calls. And this was a very long silence. And I couldn't even hear her breathing or anything. And so I, like, screamed into the phone after a long time, because it was my nickel that was paying for this. I screamed into the phone. I said, Katie, are you there? Only very loudly. And Katie said, in this tone of voice that you always wish your grown daughter would talk to you in, this very loving, kind voice. She said, oh, Mommy, I'm afraid that wasn't your dress. I said, well, whose dress was it? And she said, well, if I'm not mistaken, it was Penny Howard's dress in Rosamund Dujardin's Double Date. She said, don't you remember her twin sister Pam wore the same dress in yellow? Well, it's a bit embarrassing to admit here, but I do own the book Double Date. And so I took it off the bookshelves and I reread it. And not only is that Penny's dress that she wore to the junior prom, but she went to the junior prom with Mike. Whom, I am happy to say, she later married in Double Wedding after breaking up for a little bit in Double Feature. I own all those books. Now, I know that I did not marry a Mike. I've been, happily married for many, 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 many decades now to Joe. But aside from that, this now throws my whole high school life up in the air. I have no idea what happened and what I have borrowed from one of those wonderful books that I read. I could go on and give you other examples, but probably one is enough for now. That's a big one. And I have to say, though, that if you were to balance the pleasures of a life of reading, that opportunity to enter into another person's life, that opportunity to experience things that we will never experience, versus the few perils of a life of reading, and there are some other ones, but, you know, I wanted to do the unusual perils that we don't often think of, versus those few perils, who would not opt for a life of reading? And who, especially, would not want to share that life of reading with everybody who comes into our libraries every day? Thank you so much.